Hey, good morning. Welcome to Jays Top Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Toronto Blue Jays continue to win very tight games late. I guess technically yesterday was a comeback because they got behind at one point. For some reason, I have opened the box score from the prior day's game. This is we were talking before we came on air about how we both do a lot of prep and we're locked in on the game, but it doesn't I don't feel in routine.
Yeah.
We were also talking about, and watch how I take all this home.
I'm seated.
Also talking about some bocce that I played up at the cabin this weekend. for anyone who doesn't know bocce ball, you throw the little egg and then everyone has to take a shot. It's very similar to curling.
Yeah.
And then you get however many number of points. And I dominated the first day. It's just straight squash match dominance. And then the second day, I had locked in that I would win on aggregate for the weekend, but I was down 10-4 and the games go to 11. And the comeback that I had, and this, if you're out there and you've just installed the dock and you've mowed the lawn and things like that, when you get around to bocce at a cabin weekend, you've probably had a drink or two.
Yes, as one does.
So I'm stuck 10-4 and made the comeback to steal it and sweep the weekend. Comeback the likes of which we haven't seen since every Blue Jay game this season. Yeah. They did it again yesterday.
Inspired.
Although technically they never got behind yesterday. So it is not comeback win number 21. But they blew leads multiple times to draw tied or to draw closer. They needed every little bit of insurance runs. That's not a grammatically correct sentence, but whatever. Let's erase the first 2 minutes of this show from the podcast.
Amit, please get on that.
We'll get on to it. We've got a fun show today. Benji Molina is going to join us around 10:30, former Blue Jay. He is the Cardinal Spanish language color commentator as well, former World Series champion. I'm very curious to hear what he thinks of the fact that the Blue Jays have won 11 of their last 13. Because in 2002, when he won a World Series with the Los Angeles Angels, that team started awful.
Yeah.
They were 8-14 before they went on at this same time of year, maybe a little bit earlier than the Blue Jays, a 21-3 run, where I was like, holy cow, they're way better. So I'm very curious to hear what that experience was like, and how do you know?
Yeah, how do you know? That's a good
question. Because I've talked a lot about, like, if I'm going to buy you as a playoff threat at some point during the season, I want to see you be the best team in baseball for 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not, a lot of teams will do it over the course of the year. It doesn't mean you are the World Series favorite, but I want to see it. And I'm curious, in Benji's experience, having been on teams like that, having been on one of the most notable teams, again, a 21-3 run to pull your season out of the gutter and then win a World Series. Curious to hear what he thinks of it. We'll also talk to Davey Andrews of Fangraphs and Jeff Ponce of Baseball America. Jeff is obviously our go-to prospect guy, him and Doug Fox. Jeff does more than just the Blue Jays for Baseball America, but he's the Blue Jays, like, final word guy for Baseball America. He also is that for the Red Sox. So interesting time with Roman Anthony up right now. But Trey Savage is going to AA. We'll pick Jeff's brain about that. We'll talk Arjun Namala. Speaking of Arjun Namala, just while I'm promoting things, going to be on the show on Friday.
Boom.
Yes.
Great stuff.
What a week. Sam Shaw.
You are really tying everything together here.
All these threads. And then, of course, the big news of today. The news that I think will be official a little later, and you guys, you care about this more than the 10-9 victory last night. We think Will Robertson, who's come up on this show a couple times, is getting the call today. Nathan Lucas was scratched yesterday with neck discomfort. He collided with Ernie Clement on an awkward play on Sunday. We will circle back to Will Robertson, but I believe that's everything from my notes for today. I actually remembered to set up the show and the lineup, so yeah. How are you doing, Julia?
Were we supposed to be doing that?
I feel like my job as host is supposed to be like, hey, here's what's going on the show. But usually I'm so excited to talk about the game.
Yeah.
And here's why maybe we're feeling this way is because two nights ago it was an extra innings. It's all positive on the way out the door victory.
Yep.
Last night it was still a good victory. You still scored 10 runs. You didn't have your best stuff from any of your pitchers and you eked it out. But I think that one ending on... oh,
that's
my
it.
God. Yeah. They just got through it. Maybe that's why it's taken me 5 minutes to get into the Jays 10-9 win. How are you doing?
I have renewed my subscription to the Calm app after the first couple of games.
Is that like a meditating?
Yes, it is. There's a premium subscription I didn't think I needed anymore. here we are again.
Yeah.
Blue Jays.
My heart rate's higher today than it was yesterday. I got several tweets about, wow, that's a great heart. I didn't realize that like a 58 heart rate while I'm doing the show is like anything special.
It's amazing.
But yeah, I got a couple tweets about it. And I don't know what you're supposed to call the blue sky things, but yeah.
Yeah, my Apple Watch died in the lake a couple years ago, and I never bothered to get another one. Probably for the best.
My non-brand specific watch and non-brand specific ring, because there's no free promotion from me here. You'll see this generic coffee mug that is made with generic brand coffee. No free promotion here. Anyway.
This is my favorite show ever.
Yeah. Okay. Calm app aside, me clearly having not taken the proper meds this morning aside, the Jays win. 10-9. They have won 11 of their last 13. That is the first time they've done that since July 2022. If they win today in the series finale, which tips off, 2:15, by the way, for today's game, it will be the first time that they've won 12 of 14 since that really, really fun and one game short playoff push in late 2021, which I always remember fondly, but reading Keegan's book, The Franchise, the chapter on that year was like tingles. Yeah. Like yeah. For any, no one knows. I was going to do a The Rock thing, but arms are too hairy and tattooed to see the goose flesh anyway. So they haven't done this in a couple of years. They've won five series in a row. And even if we zoom out a little bit, they won 21-10 over the last month or so. How are you feeling big picture? Yesterday was not the quintessential clean win or anything like that, but kind of, it's been the story of a couple shows lately. They just keep finding ways.
It's pretty funny that, you know, when things are going well for the Blue Jays early on in the season, I don't want to offend anyone, but the wins were pretty boring. And there's nothing boring about this team right now. The fact that they kept adding on runs, and then in the end, they actually needed every single one of the runs that they tacked on, that is, you know, it will keep you on the edge of your seat. And we're going to talk about the bullpen, which has been such a strength for this team. This is uncharacteristic, but you could kind of also see it coming with the way that things are going with this bullpen. Well, it was time for the bats to show up. And this is just, it's exciting to watch. There's a reason to stay tuned into Blue Jays games right now, which is frankly a feeling that I don't think we had in a while with this team. It's not boring baseball. It is actually exciting. And so are they the best team in the majors right now? I don't think so. Maybe you can get a couple of things back on track, and that is mostly on the pitching side right now, and then we can talk about it. But yeah, it's there's good reason for fans to be excited about this team. That's my opinion. It is looking like a playoff contender.
Yeah, and look, they're in a playoff spot right now, and there's a lot of season left. Things can go the other way on them, but it's important to have had this stretch. And like I said, if they have not had, whether you believe the specifics of how they won these games are sustainable or not, they have won these games, and that's important. And I'm curious, Julia, as to your opinion on this. And I think there's two important considerations in this stretch, and they're the type of considerations that any team, like baseball is such a hard sport and there are so many ups and downs, that any team that goes on an 11-2 stretch is going to have some of this stuff going for them. But the Blue Jays have done this without Anthony Santander, Dalton Varsho, Max Scherzer.
Yep.
So ostensibly those reinforcements will come at some point. They have done this, and I'm talking now about the 21-10 stretch over the last month, not necessarily the 11-2 stretch here. The bullpen, the depth part of the bullpen, or the leverage part of the bullpen, has been a little shaky. The bullpen overall has been good, but Jeff Hoffman, Mason Fluharty, Chad Green, Eric Swanson, all those guys have been rough. Chris Bassett has been just okay. Bowden Francis has been pretty rough, and they're using a bullpen day once every five times through the order. If you look at the position player side as well, in addition to the recent absences of Santander and Varsho, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been fine. He has not been, second in MVP voting Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at any time during this stretch, despite the on-base streak. Bo Bichette had a really hot stretch. He's cooled off a little bit of late. So when you look at that, the Jays have done this without playing what you'd call their A-plus baseball. How encouraging is that to you?
It's encouraging in one hand, and then in another hand, it is concerning. And I don't want to be the Debbie Downer of the show, but
that's my job.
Yeah, it is. Sorry to steal your job there, but it is... you know, the Blue Jays are going to go as far as these guys take them. And the, George Springer has been great. I think that he is, you know, there's enough reason here to believe that he's going to keep making adjustments and he's going to figure out a way to help the Blue Jays win. I don't think he is going to finish the season as the home run leader for this team unless something goes wrong for one of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., even Bo, honestly, Santander. When he comes back, you hope that he finds the pop again. And don't forget about Addison Barger, who's still around and still contributing in many ways here. But the Blue Jays need Vladdy and Bo to be Vladdy and Bo. And you can be impressed with the secondary contributions that the Blue Jays are getting. It's certainly nice to see Andrés Giménez swinging the bat well again, right? We hadn't seen that since March. So it's a good feeling and it's encouraging. However, the Blue Jays want to go far. They need more from these guys. And I know that Vladdy was off yesterday. They say it was a scheduled day off. That's great. We'll see what the lineup looks like today. And if you want to make a deep postseason run, then obviously you need your lineup to be as deep as the Blue Jays lineup is right now. That said, your stars are your stars. Yeah. And when it comes to the pitching side, you kind of expect these guys to somewhat figure it out because they are veterans, because they have done this for a long time. But you know, there's still a lot that's that remains to be answered there as well, especially when it comes to Max Scherzer's return. Yeah. How is he going to look? And is there durability there that you can rely on from when he comes back to the end of the season? I don't know. There's just a lot that is still, you know, it just has me with one eyebrow raised. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
How about you?
And I'll say this regarding Scherzer and Trey Savage, who I mentioned earlier. Make sure you have your MILB TV set up in order, because Scherzer's expected to throw Friday 60 to 65 pitches and then probably need one more beyond that, but he's not all that far off yet. So I feel similarly to you in that you need, and by the way, I lumped Bo in with Vlad. He did have three hits yesterday and he was coming off that hot streak. It was really just like a bad weekend.
Three times too.
Yeah, it was just a bad weekend for Bo Bichette. I shouldn't put him all the way in there. So I agree with most of what you said. The one thing that gives me a little bit of comfort is this is, to me, kind of your, when you point at some of the stuff that's not sustainable and the people who don't want the team to do well or don't believe yet will be like, well, this will regress. Alejandro Kirk will not continue hitting 900, having a 900 OPS with two strikes. He won't continue being better than literally anyone except Cal Raleigh in high leverage situations. And that might be true. And George Springer might come down to earth a little bit and Addison Barger might have a bad month because pitchers are trying to figure him out. However, when you talk about things like Vlad hasn't hit his high gear yet, you would expect a better version of Anthony Santander back once he comes back. That's the whole point of him going on the IL and getting the PRP injection and things like that. You get Varsho back in here. That is the insulation that you have against regression. Oh, if all the stuff that's going well is going to come back down to earth a little bit, you could say, yeah, but this stuff hasn't been clicking at that level. And things don't always line up that nicely. Kirk and Springer cool off. Vlad and Santander heat up like that. It doesn't always line up like that, but that's something that gives you a little bit of confidence that even if the specific way they've won these last 11 doesn't hold, there are other ways to win that are theoretically in the chute.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, it's, I think the hardest thing for any team to do, no matter how good they are, is to have everything clicking all at once. And that includes the lineup. And so, yeah, that's a good way to look at it. And, you know, it's kind of like Mike Rowley said yesterday, these wins are banked no matter how they are coming, right? So that gives you flexibility. That gives you a bit of a cushion to figure some things out. The one thing, you know, the main thing for me, like, that is legitimately a point of concern, and we don't have to, you know, get too into this right now.
This is the get into it show. We could talk about anything you want at any, like, we could do 10 minutes on Will Robertson if you want. This is the show to get into it.
Here's the thing, though. And, if, you know, if you want to get into it, great. If you don't want to, I really just wanted to bring it up because I know, or I have a very strong feeling that we're going to be talking about this again. Can we trust Jeff Hoffman to be the undisputed closer for this team? One bounce back does not a closer make. And we're seeing a lot of bad bounce back. I don't know. That to me is the one thing that right now I'm pointing my finger at and being like, this could potentially become a bigger problem than it is right now.
And I think that there are a couple, and you're right. Jeff Hoffman comes in yesterday and first pitch gone. And it was not a great first pitch and like, yeah, tip your cap and all that stuff. But that was a rocket. The caveat here is that that was the fourth time in 5 days Jeff Hoffman was being asked to pitch. So I think where there is real Jeff Hoffman concern in general, because again, the bounce back, he is as perfect as he is in extra innings. In we saw him on the weekend give up a run when he had the cushion to do it. Obviously, we're not that far removed from an Athletics game where they ended up, they survived it anyway, but he gave up a couple. So his ERA on the season is up around 570, and some of the underlying stuff is better than that. With relievers, you're always going to have huge disagreement between the actual and the expected. But yeah, anytime your closer has a 570 ERA, you have to be on alert. I will say, in this particular instance, him being asked to pitch for a fourth time in 5 days, I think says more about where the bullpen is at this moment in time, where Jimmy Garcia and Nick Sandlund and Ryan Burr, to the extent that he's going to matter in a lower leverage role, all those guys are down. Yeah. Eric Swanson's back, but has not looked like Eric Swanson, and I don't know if he is going to look like Eric Swanson. And more importantly, you are effectively running two bullpen days right now. So last night, thank goodness, Chris Bassett, on a day he didn't have his A-plus stuff, was able to give you seven innings. Chris Bassett only took 18 pitches to get through the fifth and sixth inning.
I know.
And like, just was like, I obviously they're on the road. I don't get a chance to ask him about this, but I wonder how much when he didn't have swing and miss stuff, he was just like, I'm going to put it in tough spots to hit. Weak contact, weak contact, weak contact. The average exit velocity on Bassett balls yesterday was 83, which would be like, if that were his season long, it would be number one in baseball. That's how weak the contact was yesterday. Three, even in the seventh inning, three weak infield flies scattered around that walk. So huge credit to Bassett for giving them length, because if he didn't, I have no idea what the bullpen looks like in that scenario. They're running two bullpen days. Jimmy Garcia is on the IL, and Yariel Rodriguez is the guy who should be taking more of the leverage reps. But he was also, like, 3 weeks ago, was the guy we were talking about, maybe he can give you two on these bullpen days because he's also a length guy. So you've kind of had to change his role, and Brendan Little is very, very good. But there are some days that he's been asked to pitch a ton. He's one of the leaders in the league in games. So I think yesterday having to go to Hoffman there says more about the bullpen is really, really thin right now because of the bullpen days, because of the injuries, and because I just, even healthy, I don't think they have enough arms yet. Go listen to Yankees Talk Plus, Phillies Talk Plus, Cubs Talk Plus, whatever. Every team is saying they don't have enough bullpen arms yet and they'll need to address it in July. But I think yesterday, like, nobody wanted to go to Jeff Hoffman there. Chad Green just was the only guy green who's a right-hander and was bad.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's the thing, though. They did have a four-run lead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And
no, I'm cool with Chad Green going back out there in that spot. And honestly, like, I didn't really want Chad Green pitching, who was it? Wilson Contreras.
Yes.
There either. Even if he had given up that home run, though, he still only needs one more out. Yeah. So it's a tough ask. John Schneider actually got asked about this after the game and said because Hoffman had gotten up in the eighth already, he had pitched three times in 4 days and already warmed up. He was going to be down today regardless. So they thought may as well use him for the one out. So anyway, all of this is to say Jeff Hoffman is not on my red flag list yet, like a pale yellow flag. I think his job gets easier when Jimmy Garcia is back and when one of the rotation spots stabilizes so that you can actually keep leverage guys in leverage. But look, before Jimmy Garcia got hurt, I think we had a conversation on this show about, like, should Jimmy Garcia take some of the closing reps while Hoffman figures it out? I don't think it's unrealistic to expect that we will have that conversation again when Jimmy Garcia is healthy.
Yeah, and this is not—it's not exclusive to the Blue Jays either. It's not exclusive to Jeff Hoffman. There's a ton of closers around the league who have gone through these.
Ryan Helsley just gave up three saves in a week. Yeah, Devin Williams has lost the closer role like eight times, and it's like the end of the world that Jake Cousins got pulled from a rehab assignment for the Yankees. Like, this is—I mean, the Phillies. Jordan Romano is still going through it and has a similar ER, like, surface level line to Jeff Hoffman. So, but that doesn't make it easier. And it is, like, pretty remarkable that they've done this stretch while their top setup man is hurt and their closer has been not completely ineffective, but not as sharp as he was early in the year.
Yeah. Again, if you can keep eking out these wins and scoring enough to come out with five series wins in a row while your guys figure it out, that's great. Those wins are there. And yeah. Blue Jays are starting to feel like they're breathing down the neck of the Yankees a little bit, which is something that I didn't.
They're four games back.
Four games back. Like, that's not a ton.
And this is, look, I'm in baseball more than any other sport, I think you have to be careful with strength of schedule and who's on the opponent, because three games against, you know, think of the Blue Jays. Three games against the Blue Jays where it's Bassett, Berríos, Gausman on the hill is a lot different than three games against the Blue Jays where it's one of those guys, Francis, and a bullpen day. So, and those things are fluid. Three games against the Blue Jays right now doesn't feel the same as three games against the Blue Jays a month ago. The Angels, when we thought that was one of the worst series the Jays will ever have. And then since then, the Angels have been actually a pretty good team.
Yeah,
they won seven in a row. They swept the Dodgers. So these things are fluid. So you can't get too sold on it. However, the Jays are almost through this stretch where they played, I think, 9 of 10 series were against winning teams in this window. And then between once they get out of this stretch, heading into the All-Star break, it gets a little lighter. You get the White Sox on there twice, I think. A couple other teams that aren't playing their best baseball. So if you are looking at the Yankees, like, yeah, you keep this rolling, we'll be talking about a divisional race instead of a wild card race. It's a little cart before the horse right now, four games out. But like, this is that's the kind of thing you start talking about when, oh, the fourth rotation spot is stabilized. Oh, Jimmy Garcia is back and the bullpen actually has leverage options. Then we could get greedy.
I know. And that part is exciting for sure. And, you know, again, do I expect the Blue Jays to sweep today? I never expect the Blue Jays I never expect anyone to sweep because it's such a hard thing to do, honestly.
It's also a bullpen day.
It's a bullpen day. It's been tough. The Cardinals don't strike out. And I had to actually go and look at the number. And kudos to Chris Bassett for making that adjustment because, one, it kept his pitch count pretty low if he's pitching a contact. And two, it was just good recognition of who your opponent is. I was surprised to see the numbers that the Cardinals actually strike out more still than the Blue Jays.
And maybe the Jays are number one.
Yeah.
The Jays strike out less than any team in baseball. Maybe, and they also swing and miss less than any team in baseball.
Right on. Maybe it's just because I'm so into the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And you kind of need that separation to, but it's been ridiculous these few games against the Cardinals.
One of my favorite things about baseball is like, and this is not, I feel the same way as I'm going through it, but one of the funny things is, and we talked to Craig Goldstein about this, I looked up after. The Dodgers are the best team in the league with runners in scoring position, and he came on here complaining about the Dodgers' inability to hit the runners in scoring position. But I would bet there are 30 fan bases right now that think they don't hit well enough with runners in scoring position. The bullpen isn't managed well enough, and they strike out too much. And like, I would bet 30 fan bases feel that way, or some people in each of the 30 fan bases. The Blue Jays, you can have questions about the bullpen, certainly. They strike out the least in baseball. And how that materializes sometimes is, sometimes you make a lot of weak contact and it finds gloves. Sometimes you make really hard contact and finds gloves. Sometimes, like yesterday.
Oh, you, man. I know where you're going with
you
this.
You bleed Miles Michaelis. What is the Game of Thrones? You flay Miles Michaelis. Over the course of the game, the Blue Jays had 7 hits yesterday that came off the bat 80 miles an hour or softer, which is very, very soft. That's a light hit ball. Alejandro Kirk had a bloop. Addison Barger had a bloop. Barger and Alan Roden both had good examples of kind of like fighting off and inside outing a pitch. Great video package here from our producer, Amit Mann, that we're going to try to find contact for Miles Michaelis and send it to him. Because get this. So we have exit velocity tracking as far back as 2015. Mm-hmm. 7 hits is the most soft contact hits the Blue Jays have had in a game in the ball tracking era, except for opening day 2023 against Miles Michaelis. So twice now, the two most successful soft hit days in Blue Jays measured history both came against Miles Michaelis, which is really amusing to me.
It is pretty funny, but it was clearly an approach. It was clearly a game plan there for the Blue Jays. They were waiting a long time, especially in the Allen Road and at bats. I think you can see that pretty clearly.
Yeah.
Just how short, compact the swing is. The definition of not trying to do too much, right? You have a runner on. All you need to extend this lead is a single the other way. He took a slider the other way, right? He's clearly just waiting for something in the zone that he can slap for a single. And that is okay. Because, listen, it worked before, right? And it's why not? Why wouldn't you go to that again? Especially if you don't think, like, you know, the Andrés Giménez home run was great.
Yeah.
And that was a good swing.
Worked to count for a 3-1 fastball.
Pulled swing, exactly, you know, the type of swing that he can have success in and give the Blue Jays a little bit more.
This is March version of Andrés Giménez now.
This is the cleanup hitter coming up.
Yeah. By the way, 7 hits in the last 5 games for Giménez. Nice to see him kind of, welcome back.
Yeah. But if this is the game plan, if this is what's worked in the past, you don't necessarily need to go to power every time, right? That's also the beauty of this lineup. And it's the beauty of the secondary contributors for this team who have, you know, some of them have some pop to the bat, but take you back to April when the Blue Jays were winning games. It was a lot of small ball. It was a lot of just stringing singles together. There's nothing wrong with going back to that every once in a while, Blake. You need to have different tools in your toolbox if you want to win these series.
Yeah, and like you said, Michaelis is kind of the type of guy you want to do that against. Look, you can never predict with accuracy whether the balls you put in play are going to drop. This is why you'll hear Ollie Marmol last night talk about the BABIP battle, the batting average on balls in play. We've heard Dan Shulman talk about on the broadcast Kevin Gausman getting BABIPed to death. And that's just, if you're a pitcher, you can't always control where it drops in. If you're a hitter, you can't always control where the defender is if you put a good swing on it. However, if you're up against a pitcher that you know doesn't miss a lot of bats, you know you're going to be able to, you feel good about your approach, you feel good about where the offense is over the last couple of weeks, I think it's a lot easier to be like, yeah, it's you can think back to early in the year, that Astros series, for example, where they got no hits. Mm-hmm. You cannot go up to the plate with the belief that you're going to string 3-4 singles together or a couple doubles in there. You can't, even if you tell yourself that and believe in the project, the proof hasn't been there. Right now, it's there. You can do that a little bit more. Alejandro Kirk's a good example, too. I know he went yard each of the last 2 days because he's just on another absolute heater right now. But even the early part of his turnaround wasn't really about, sure, there were some doubles in there, but it was just the at-bats were so good. He never strikes out. It was a lot of singles going the other way and using, okay, you're gonna hammer me on the outside part of the plate with stuff that I can't get around on to pull. I'm gonna take them all the other way. Take them all the other. Even the one last night, he took the other way, and it just kind of kept drifting into the bullpen out there. So I think he's a good example of that as well. We gotta take a break in a minute here before Benji Molina comes on, but I did want to mention that Ben Nicholson-Smith and a few others have reported that Will Robertson is expected to join the team today. We're not entirely sure if that's a taxi squad move or if Nathan Lucas, who got scratched yesterday with neck discomfort following the Ernie Clement collision, is going on the IL. If it is, though, luckily, if you've been listening to the show, you know about Will Robertson. Yo, he's come up on the show a couple times. We talked to David Schneider about him. We talked to Doug Fox about him. We've talked about him after that 3-homer day. If you don't know Will Robertson, fourth round pick in 2019, has been in the org the entire time. So he's now 27, another left-handed hitting outfielder with big exit velocities. More than 50% of his balls in play this year have been hard hit, which is a really nice.
Those are Alejandro Kirk numbers.
Yes. OPS is almost 1,000 down at AAA. So, he's turned himself from a guy who was a fringy prospect to a non-prospect to now. Could he be the 12th guy as a kind of lefty thumper who can man a corner outfielder? We'll see.
Yeah.
But if you have a 1,000 OPS at AAA, even at 27, I don't mind seeing him in a bench spot. The only interesting note here is he is not on the 40-man. So Joey Loperfido, Leo Jimenez, and Aralvis Martinez are on the 40-man. Leo Jimenez is recently back from the long bout of mono. You're not going to call him up. Aralvis Martinez has hit a lot better of late, but he's still trying to figure out second base. He doesn't play a corner outfield. So maybe he's not the guy. But it is interesting that Robertson would yet again jump Loperfido. We saw Alan Roden and David Schneider up over Loperfido as well. So it's kind of getting interesting there where Loperfido has a 40-man spot. Robertson, they have open 40-man spots, but eventually Scherzer and Burr later than that, Manoah are going to need to come off the 60-day aisle. Maybe this is one of those things that solves himself with an injury later, but interesting use of a 40-man spot if it is Will Robertson over Joey Loperfido, who hasn't been Will Robertson level, but has been okay at AAA.
Yeah, maybe this is a matter of, Joey Loperfido was acquired via trade, and maybe they don't want to rush him back here because it was not a good time for him last year, right? So maybe this is just about keeping a guy in his routine and figuring out the stuff that he needs to figure out with Loperfido. I would have to ask.
Yeah, it's a good point, too, because if Robertson's going to come up and it's like, well, you're a pinch hitter against right-handed relievers, you maybe don't want to do that to Loperfido. Although Loperfido is 26 already, too. So this is the sneaky thing about all these guys at AAA is everyone other than Aralvis is kind of old. so old for prospect. Roden, David Schneider, Addison Barger even. Those guys are a little... Barger's not a fair one to loop in there, but Loperfido's old for a prospect. Mm-hmm. So anyway, That'll be interesting to see. We'll keep an eye on that. Eric Lauer is going to start today. Spencer Turnbull giving some length out of the bullpen. And then Jeff Hoffman is definitely down, but we'll see how the rest of the bullpen day shakes out. We're going to take a break right now. On the other side, we'll talk to former Blue Jay, 13-year MLB vet, 2002 World Series champion, and Cardinals broadcaster Benji Molina. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Blue Jays have won two so far in St. Louis at 2:15 today. They'll try to get the sweep. It'll be Eric Lauer on the hill against Matthew Liberatore. Let's go down to St. Louis. Let's talk to former Blue Jay, 13-year MLB vet, former World Series champion, Benji Molina. Benji, thanks so much for doing this. How you doing?
No, this is a pleasure for me, man. I love being on your guys' show. I mean, you should do that more often, man. What's up?
Buddy, we'll have you on anytime you want. You could be daily if you'd like. How you doing, man? How's the season treating you so far?
I'm doing good, man. I'm still here doing the Spanish radio for the Cardinals, who started like 10 seasons ago, and we're still going. Now we're doing the 81 home games on the Spanish radio, so it's growing, man. We don't go on the road yet, but the 81 home games is pretty good for me.
Benji, it must be so rewarding to be able to, you know, broadcast in your language and sort of, I guess, widen the audience, right? That is now making accessible, I guess, these home games for Cardinals fans who maybe are not as fluent in English. How do you feel about that?
Well, let me tell you this real quick. I did Yadi's games too, so he was still playing. So it was an amazing adventure. It was an amazing dream to do his games. And not only that, people need to understand that we don't do the games for the players necessarily. We do the games for their families, which they don't speak English. So they have no idea what English is. They don't understand it. So now they have a voice, a couple voices that are doing their games, talking about their son, talking about their uncle, you know what I mean, like nephew and things like that. So we had a lot of family coming into us and say, thank you for having the Spanish. Now we understand what you guys are saying, and I'm watching the game on a certain TV station, but I change it to you guys on the radio so I can understand. This is why we do it. This is why we came up to them, or they came up to us too first. But then after that, we say, hey, don't forget, we're not doing it only for the locals. We're doing it for the families.
That's a great point. I was in Cuba for the World Series a couple years ago and had the ESPN broadcasts on, and they don't get ESPN live there, so it was very cool to watch that, to listen with them, and that was rare for them to get to experience Spanish language broadcast live. And yeah, the Cardinals have a number of Dominican players, Cuban, Panama, and you guys are, of course, Puerto Rican. Benji, I gotta ask though, so I have two brothers as well. How hard was it to, and I don't mean this that you wouldn't be critical of Yadier. If I was calling my brother's games, I would be nitpicking. I would be making fun of them and teasing them a lot. Did you have trouble keeping it straight with Yadier's games?
I had trouble. I had trouble because he's a joker, man. He's a joker. So I did not want to sound like I was joking with him, and all of a sudden I go to his house and the door's locked, you know? And so, you know, I was being very careful. I was being very careful. Sometimes when he had arguments with a fight or arguments with the umpires or something, man, I was like, what the heck do I do now? You know, I was trying to hang on the window, trying to go down there and try to fight for him and stuff. But no, man, I had so much fun with it. Yeah, he made it fun. He had success when we were doing it. Mm-hmm. Our first home run call was his home run.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's so awesome.
Our first ever home run call in Spanish was Yadi. So he made it special for us. He took care of us. But it was hard, man. It was hard not to say some things and, you know, keep it to ourselves, because I don't know how people are going to take it. Even Yadi, I don't know how Yadi's going to take it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I don't know, it seems, I don't speak Spanish, but it seems like you guys have a fun vibe going there when I see the clips at social or hear you on podcasts and things like that. Benji, how are you feeling about the current Cardinals team? Obviously, they had a really great start to the season, but the last 2 weeks, things haven't been going exactly the way they had been. What are you seeing in the Cardinals slumping a little bit here?
You know what? I think I always said it in any radio that I've been, I always said it. They have fight, man. They don't give up. They're like the Blue Jays on the National League. They don't strike out much. They put the ball on play. They give you a great at-bat. The bullpen was great until, like you said, a couple weeks ago, they started hitting a bump. But let me tell you, man, those guys fight, man. They have a big heart when they go out to play. They know what they're doing. They know how to play the game. Yeah, things are going to happen in the game, you know, that, you know, it's not necessarily all going to go pretty, you know. But they know how to battle back, man. They really show you they have a fight in their heart. They have big heart. They know how to play. They play great defense, and it saves you some games. So I'm excited for this team. I tell you the truth. I think nobody saw it coming. Everybody thought they were not going to be this good. But they're showing people like, hey, man, I'm here. We're here. We're winning games. We're winning. Listen to this. They're winning against the best pitching in the league. They're coming in and beating them. Wheeler, Aaron Nola, they beat up on Skeens. They beat up on these great pitchers. So I'm really excited to see what they can do over the whole year, because we're not playing 3 month seasons. We play 6 month seasons. So it'll be very interesting to see where they go all the way out to the 6 months.
Benji, I'm wondering how much of Oliver Marmol you're seeing in the way that the Cardinals have played this season. He's been around for a while, right? And he seems to be a guy who always has something positive to say about his team. What do you see? How much of an influence does Marmol have in the way that the Cardinals have played?
Let me tell you, they have coaches that are winners. Stubby Clapp, the Canadian. Stubby Clapp is one of the best coaches in the AAA at that moment when he got called up. Pop Warner's the veteran. They have Willie McGee. They have all these coaches. Right now they have John Jay, Danny Descalzo. They have Brent Brown. So it's not only Ollie, you know. They have buy-in into every coach possible in that team. They buying in Ollie. They buying in on the pitching coach. They buying in on the work. They buying in on everyday grind. These guys are, whatever Ollie's message inside the clubhouse is, they show you they're buying in. They show you they're coming out every single day to beat you. You know what I'm saying? They don't beat themselves. So they're coming out. And like I said, like whatever Ollie's saying in there, they're buying it, man. And they're playing good ball.
Sure.
That's
are.
Yeah, it's good to see. The Blue Jays are playing pretty good ball, too. And Benji, I want to ask you about the Jays because they've won 11 of their last 13. The 2002 Angels that you won a World Series with, they started the season. You guys started the season pretty poorly and then went on this three or four week stretch where you guys were unbeatable. I think you went 21-3 and totally turned the season around. So I'm curious, in your experience, how do you know, or how do you feel it in a clubhouse if a good stretch like this is real and is going to continue versus just you had a good week or two?
Yeah, I think the team will tell you, and the Blue Jays are telling you guys, the Blue Jays, not coaching, not organization. The players are showing you guys that they're for real. They're playing in a freaking tough division, man. That is no joke. Even the Red Sox are down. Even the Baltimore is down, but they are really good teams. So you guys are playing in a freaking worst series almost every series out there. And here's the thing. They're showing you guys fun baseball, man. Dude, you guys are fun to watch. I love Alejandro Kirk. I love that guy. And it's not because he's hitting. Obviously, everybody loves the hitting catcher, right? But I'm not saying about that. He's calling a good game. You know, he's out there battling it. You see Springer having great at-bats. You see the young guys helping out. That's what we had out there. We had veterans, but we had young guys coming in and stepping in. So I see some of the same medicine, you know, for you guys. I guess everybody needs bullpen, right? They need bullpen help. Mm-hmm. It's not on the Blue Jays. But I think everybody needs bullpen help. Obviously, one starter that is a veteran starter that can solidify that starting rotation, that would be a help. But, man, you guys are fun to watch. You guys don't strike out. You guys put the ball on play. He drives the freaking pitcher nuts. And most of all, he drives me nuts. You know?
Yeah, no, we get it.
Come on, swing and miss once in a while, bud.
We had a similar conversation in our first segment about the Cardinals, actually, Benji. But you mentioned Alejandro Kirk there, and we wanted to ask you about him. Obviously, it goes beyond the hitting. And the one thing that I'm very curious to hear from you is, how difficult is it to actually hit the way that he has with all of the responsibility, on top of all of the responsibilities of the catching position? Because it's not easy to sort of navigate it all, eh?
It's not easy to do both. To do the catching on a grinding every day, and the hitting, you put them both together, and it's not easy at all. Not many catchers can do that. For real, they cannot do it. It's really difficult, and what he's doing is super, super special. I think a lot of the league's catching, we either hit and they're not very good catching, or they're okay catching, or they're good catchers, but they cannot hit very good. You know, a lot of that's what you see mostly. But to have a catcher that do both good, it is very difficult to find, and you guys have to take care of him, because holy moly, it's a very exciting player. I mean, a lot of people see his build and short and all that stuff. I mean, I'm not far from that either. You know, I'm like right about around his height too. But man, he shows a big heart. You guys have a great, exciting team. I love Berríos, La Máquina. We call it La Máquina in Puerto Rico. I love Vladdy. I love Bichette. Those guys are coming in to show you every single day grind. You see what I'm saying? So when the young guys come in from the AAA and they see these guys showing it to them that they come in to play every single day, that's what they're going to learn. And that's what you see from the young guys too. These guys are going to come in and step in and say, you know what, we need to win every single game. And this is what they're doing, man. It's very exciting to watch.
With respect to Jose Berríos, I know that Yadi, and I'm sure you were involved, used to hold a celebrity softball game in San Juan. And now Jose Berríos has been doing that the last couple summers or the last couple winters for La Máquina Foundation. How special is that for you to see another Puerto Rican player kind of carry on the legacy that you and your brothers did giving back with baseball in Puerto Rico?
Very, very special. Very special. We grew up with our idol, Roberto Clemente, which was a great player, but he was a better person away from the game. And that's what these kids are learning. That's what these kids are doing. We have Carlos Beltran. We have the foundations of Yadi now, Lindor. Now we have all Baez. Now we have all these kids doing this. Foundations to help out the Puerto Rican kids where they grow up before. Now they're trying to make them better person, better human beings. They're trying to make them help them out with all the you know, hurricanes and things that happen. And a lot of people cannot rebound from that. You know, they're very, you know, they're struggling. So these people are taking care of them. It is so nice to see this happening, because a lot of people before them show them the way. So now when they see these, they want to follow up and say, you know what? These guys helped me out when I was a kid. I'm going to help out some kids. So this needs to be happening. And in the future, hopefully other players, step up and do the same, because it is amazing the job that these kids do for the foundations and for the people in Puerto Rico.
It's great, and it's, Jose always talks he gets very excited speaking about it, and it sounds like a lot of fun to have those softball games and home run derbies down there and everything. Benji, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about your year with the Blue Jays back in 2006. It was a fun time here. The team had just gone out and got you, AJ Burnett, BJ Ryan, Lyle Overbay, Troy Glass. What do you remember about your 1 year in Toronto?
I remember a lot the challenge. I remember the challenge of what I was telling you guys about the division.
Mm-hmm.
We played great teams. It felt like we were facing great teams every freaking day, man. We were like, holy crap, can we get a break? You know, can we face some high schoolers or something, you know, and probably feel better about ourselves? But nope. That's one thing that stood up in my head and stood there for a while. Another thing that I always think about is how beautiful Toronto is, how nice the stadium was for me. I hit 19 homers in 90 games, man. I wish I would have stayed there. I wish they would have get me a 2 or 3 year deal. I would have stayed there with my heart open. So I love the city. I love the people there. I know they have great fans. But man, I remember all that. I stayed at the Soho. I don't even know if that thing is open anymore, right across the street from the stadium. So it was a very nice place.
Probably not. I would assume, but not sure.
No, it's down there.
Is it really?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, yeah, it's there's one at like King and Spadina ish.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, well, we have one more about that year. Benji, one more about that year for you. You get to see Pete Walker as the Blue Jays pitching coach now. He was on that 2006 team. Eric Hinsky was also a coach after his playing days. Kevin Barker, a broadcast personality here at Sportsnet. I'm just wondering, could you see those future careers based on these guys' personalities while you were playing with them?
Yes, very much. And we had so many other ones. I mean, Vernon Wells was great. Troy Glass was good. It's just that he was more into horses and stuff with his wife, right? There was so many. Albert Bay, man, what a hitter, and a personality so great. Then we had Aaron. Wow, what was his name? A second baseman,
Aaron Hill.
Yes. So we had great people over there, and guess what? Last night's game, I had a chance to see Moose. I don't know if you guys know Moose. He's the clubhouse, the head clubhouse for the Toronto Jays. He was there when I was there, young pup starting, and now he's the head, man. So I got a chance to see him. He got so excited to see me. So, you know, their relationships and all that stuff, it was awesome. I'm telling you straight up from my heart, if you guys would have offered me a 2-year deal, 3-year deal, I would have stayed in a heartbeat. So I was having fun.
That's great. It would have been nice to have you a little longer. Benji, it was great to get to chat with you this morning. Thanks so much for doing it, and enjoy the game.
Hey, thank you so much, and let us win this one, please.
Do our best. Thanks, Benji.
Thank you so much.
Benji Molina, Cardinals Spanish radio commentator, 13-year MLB vet, and yeah, 2006 Toronto Blue Jays, 2002 World Series with the Anaheim Angels, but I'm sure he remembers the 2006 with the Blue Jays more fondly. And he's not wrong about the divisions. That was the year the Blue Jays won 87 games and weren't even close to a playoff spot.
Yeah, it's a different time.
Yeah, the new wild card era, there are people can make certain gripes about it, and I understand. And sometimes it feels like a bad team gets in the playoffs. I would have loved to have that in 2006 and 2008. Mm-hmm. It would have fundamentally changed my peak fandom. Years. By the way, Troy, I quickly Googled Troy Gloss's horses, and in that season, he and his wife had a horse named Davidson win a big race, the Bromont CCI. I don't know anything else about Troy Gloss's love of horse racing, but yeah, apparently they were winning, not just on the baseball diamond.
I love when you go and just Google stuff that someone brings up. First of all, I think it's so impressive that you can divide your attention like that. And second of all, it makes for a better show. You're just giving us so much more cool information. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. The next guest that we have, I'm not going to Google some of what he wrote about recently because it's not exactly radio appropriate. So yesterday we got into what we do. We talked about Cal Raleigh. We talked with Meg Rowley about Cal Raleigh, and it came up that he had talked about BBLs with Mina Kimes. We talked about some other nonsense yesterday, too. Some self-inflicted pain. We talked about Craig Goldstein that wasn't radio appropriate. Well, what if a certain analytics writer charted when players hit the paternity list most often and prepared us for what is to come? This is not actually the bulk of what we're going to talk about with Davey Andrews. We're going to talk Blue Jays. We're going to talk Twins. We're going to talk Kyle Schwarber, who the Blue Jays are going to see again this weekend. But yeah,
that's absolutely the tease, though.
Absolutely bizarro stuff from Davey Andrews. What else would we expect from a guy who's in a band with Mike Petriello, Michael Clare, and Daniel Epstein, and who has written a song about the Bluefield Blue Jays called The Tallest Town Blues? We'll get into all of that with Davey Andrews next. Jeff Ponce of Baseball America joins us in the second hour as well. Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Toronto Blue Jays in action. If you missed it a little earlier, Eric Lauer is going to lead the bullpen day today. He comes in with a 2.08 ERA, which is really, really good.
Yeah, we'll see.
We will see. He's been, you know, he's stretched out pretty well. Like, if he's rolling, I don't think they'd hesitate to let him go a second time through the order. Now, this is a Cardinals team that can go... they can go righty-heavy if they want. However, three of their everyday players... like every day in the top of the lineup, guys are left-handed hitters. It is a day game after a night game. Maybe that affects things. But if I'm the Cardinals, I'm probably just rolling with my lineup Once Eric Lauer is done, we know Spencer Turnbull is going to make his Jays debut in some form today. So even if you're going to get like four innings of Lauer as a lefty, Turnbull's going to come in after that and turn some of your guys around. I would probably just play the lineup you want to play, not worry about the handedness stuff that much.
We know for a fact that Eric Lauer is not going super deep into this game.
No, I would be surprised if he faces anyone for a third time. So beyond Lauer, Spencer Turnbull will make his debut. We'll see how that works out. He's going to have to continue to kind of stretch out in that role as a bulk guy for the time being. He was stretched out pitch-wise at AAA, but it wasn't particularly effective. Still dealing with some mechanical things. So we'll see how that goes. We can assume Jeff Hoffman is down. He's pitched four the last 5 days. Chad Green and Mason Fluharty threw 19 and 15 pitches respectively last night. I would imagine they're not eager to use those guys again if they can avoid it. So beyond Lauer and Turnbull, you'll have Yariel Rodriguez, Brandon Little, Eric Swanson, Braden Fisher available. Braden Fisher's really impressed me. I know he didn't look great in his one spot start and he got hit a little bit, but we'll see more of him moving forward.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind getting a good look at him in this one as well.
Legit.
I would also like to get a good look at some of the baking of our next guest. We're joined now by Davey Andrews of FanGraphs. Also has some Jays and Twins stuff. He is, of course, of the Subway Ghosts as well. Davey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, man. So for anyone who doesn't know, you and I have talked about this before. I've talked about it with Mike Petriello and Daniel Epstein and Michael Clare. We've collected all four of the Subway Ghosts, the band that you guys have. And sometimes we joke around about that, but like, you guys also have a new EP, Underground Mutants. How was that process? How was doing the live shows with some of your best baseball buddies the other week?
I mean, it's an incredible thing. You know, like I moved to Brooklyn and I had not been, I'd only been writing about baseball for a year at that point. And then it turned out that like two MLB writers, Mike Clare and Mike Petriello, literally live around the corner from me. And I made a record with Dan Epstein because we were both writing a baseball prospectus. And these are now like my best friends. And we do band practice and we have shows and we just put out our first record. And it's a crazy thing for me. You know, like I put out 10 records on my own, but they were almost all just like sitting in, you know, this room in my apartment and recording, like sitting on the floor myself. So my life has taken a turn here.
So for anyone who doesn't know, you've also, I think the Edouard Julien song last year got some notoriety on baseball social media. You also have a Bluefield Blue Jays song from back in the day, though. Can you give me the inspiration for a song about a baseball team that, as the song goes into, no longer exists?
Right. Well, yeah. So I made two whole records about the contraction of the minor leagues. And that is one of my favorite
what
songs
a sentence
I've ever
to say, by the way. Sorry to cut you off, man. I made two records about the contraction of the minor league. Great stuff.
As you do. That's honestly one of my favorite songs on the record. And it was very much I was going for, like, I'm just going to sing like Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields. And it worked to the point that if you put on a Magnetic Fields song that my wife doesn't know, she'll go, is this you? Which
wow.
is really the most flattering thing you could say. That one I was looking at, and they were just kind of in this weird situation where they're split between two states, but so there's two separate towns, both called Bluefield, that the team once sat in. And so I thought that was really fun that everybody must be really sad in Bluefield and also in Bluefield.
Tallest Town Blues is the song. You can find it on Davey's Bandcamp page as well.
That's got to be such a cool outlet, Davey, to be able to sort of unite your interests like that. I have dabbled in music in my time. I'm not really...
You can shred. Come on, you're downplaying it.
But it's cool, you know, because I kind of got away from it when, you know, baseball became a career or journalism became a career.
Right.
I think it's pretty commendable that not only are you still going at it, you've found a way to, a very fun way to unite your interests here.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. I feel there have been a couple of times in my life, like I did comedy for a long time before I started doing music and before I started doing baseball writing. And so there are times where I feel like anytime I have an idea, I know like, okay, there's somewhere I can put this. That's a very cool feeling.
Okay. Yeah. It's great that you guys can actually do the stuff. Whereas I'm like, oh, I love baseball and basketball. I'll do baseball and basketball media. Oh, I love music. I'll host a music show. I can't actually do any of the things myself. So that's
those who can't do broadcast.
Yeah. That's how it turns out.
It's not too late, man.
It's too late. It's too late for me. It's as someone who suffered an elbow injury from baseball in the last couple of weeks. It's too late for me. It's
what happened? I mean, I have blown out my knees 5 times playing adult rec league soccer, so you don't need to worry what happened.
I asked some reporter friends of ours. It's not that embarrassing. I hurt my elbow playing baseball. I overdid it after a couple years. I played like 3 times in 1 week and was like going like a hard O, and then my elbow flared up. The thing that I really wanted to do and would have like lost, I would have been kicked out of the clubhouses and stuff like that. I wanted to somehow like talk to one of our friends who are actual reporters, not like me, and get like Dr. Keith Meister's number and just like text him a photo of my elbow and just be like, and like for anyone who doesn't know, I'm like covered in tattoos too. So you can't even see my, it wouldn't be anything. I just wanted to text it to him and be like, you like what you see? Like, but no, there's no Tommy John in my future. Thankfully, I'm just getting old. That's about it. All right, let's talk about real baseball before I get run off the station and have to find a new thing to broadcast about that I can't actually do myself. Davey, so in addition to Fangraph stuff, you've been doing a little bit more Blue Jays stuff this year as well. I know you do Twins stuff. How are you enjoying that, first of all? And how interesting is it for you to, you know, go from team-specific ideas to league-wide ideas? It's something I think about all the time because we get windows to do MLB-wide stuff, but we're mostly Jays stuff here. How has that felt creatively, going kind of national to team focus and back and forth?
It's really fun. So I am off. I was editing a blog called Jay Center, but Leo Morgenstern of Fangraphs is now running it.
Friend of the show as well.
Yeah, Leo is great and super funny. So I was running Jay Center for a bit, getting it off the ground, and it's really fun because when you can write about anything, you kind of look at the whole league and you go, where is there something interesting? I must find it. And so you look very granularly at the leaderboards or the recent trends. But like when you're watching a team day in and day out, you really get to appreciate the little things that like Alejandro Kirk did. Like in spring training, he was amazing at knowing when to challenge. He was so good at that. And you only know that if you watch a lot of Blue Jays games. And if you're trying to keep your eye on the whole league, then you miss the more fun specific stuff like that.
Yeah, and something else that I'm curious about, just as we kind of stay in the general writing space here, is how much you can also sort of plug in other interests into the work that you're doing right now.
Right. Well, that I'm very lucky here. Like when the Torpedo Bats came out, I was the first person to write about it at Fangraphs, and I ended up drawing like a bunch of cartoony pictures to describe what a torpedo bat looked like. I drew in colored pencil a picture of a pregnant whale, and nobody said, hey, maybe we shouldn't run this on our award-winning publication. In fact, Dr. Alan Nathan, the esteemed baseball physicist, sent me a message and he said, hey, is it okay if I use this picture too when I explain how these actually work? And I was like, yes, you may, esteemed physicist.
Yeah, it would look, if Kiri Oler can get away with some of the headlines she gets away with at Fangraphs, you're fine. I do think you were pushing it a little bit with the Jacob Wilson unbalanced load puns, but otherwise, Otherwise,
I'm going to be honest, that didn't occur to me until they showed up in the comments.
Come on.
Wow, really? Well, you know it.
All right.
That's disappointing.
No, this is my fault. I've steered us too far inside. Okay, so you mentioned Alejandro Kirk and how good he was at challenging in spring training, which is a fun little wrinkle that maybe we'll see in 2026 if Rob Manfred has his way. We'll see. Right. He has also been tearing the cover off of the ball over the last couple of weeks. And on the season, he has been one of the most valuable players in all of baseball. He's top 15 now in position player war based on Fangraphs metric. Baseball Reference has him a little worse. I know you've been digging in on some Alejandro Kirk stuff for an upcoming piece. What have you seen from Kirk at the dish specifically?
So it's really interesting. So yeah, he's hitting, as well as he did in 22, but you know, he had these two down seasons in a row where you kind of thought, is this just who he's going to be? He's going to be an amazing catcher and a pretty good hitter, not quite league average, but he's bounced back in this huge way. And so I was kind of digging into the numbers and I noticed that he looks a little bit different. I mean, he's still one of the best contact hitters in the game. And what I was really curious, what I said to you yesterday when you kind of asked what I wanted to talk about, is I was like, well, I noticed he's hitting the ball way, way harder, but he's not necessarily like slugging all that much more. Like his isolated slugging, he's not hitting home runs and doubles and triples. And so I was really curious about why that was. So I've been digging in on it this morning and I'll write it up for tomorrow. But I find it really fascinating, his swing, in order to make all that extra hard contact, his bat speed is up, but his bat, the new StatCast bat tracking metric, show us that his bat is a lot flatter. So he is actually pulling the ball in the air more than he's ever done, but his swing isn't quite as designed to lift anymore. So when he hits it in the air, he's not hitting it as hard. So it's this really interesting trade-off. He's hitting better, he's being more aggressive, but he's also now not designed to hit the ball out of the ballpark as much as he once was. It's a really cool thing, and it shows you how all of this stuff is disconnected.
It's interesting because, like, when we get into something like, you know, expected versus actual stats, Kirk's such a fascinating guy because you mentioned he doesn't pull the ball in the air a lot. I think his slugging versus his expected slugging is always going to lag a little bit because he's going to hit doubles that are singles for him. Like right now, there's about 60 points of difference between his actual slugging and his expected slugging. Some of that might be misfortune, but you know, he sneaks one down the right field line that rattles into the corner. That's a single for him often. Right. But when it comes to the hard hit rate, the exit velocity, the flatness of the swing, he's like almost at the very top of the league in terms of something like expected batting average. So even if he's not going to be a 20 home run guy, like he's among, like when you dig in and you see the hard hit rate and the low strikeout rate and stuff, you would have to say, like, he's among the safer bets to, like, finish the season hitting 300, right?
I mean, that's a great point that I hadn't thought of. But, yeah, because he makes so much contact. He's always, you know, in the leaders in terms of contact rate and strikeout rate. And all of a sudden, he's swinging way harder and trading just the tiniest bit of contact. His strikeout rate is even lower this year. He's trading some walks for some extra hard hit balls. And, like, who wouldn't take that trade?
It's also, you know, telling, I guess, that he's homered over the past two games here, but it's also, I guess, telling that it looked very Vladdy-esque in essence, you know,
just especially like the one last night. It just kind of kept drifting oppo right center.
Yeah, so it's nice to see, I guess, the data behind that too.
Right, and that's the thing. The Blue Jays have so many of those guys who just hit the ball really hard and really straight. But he's sort of turning into one. But I mean, it seems like a good trade-off for him right now.
So this past weekend, we saw the Blue Jays play against the Minnesota Twins, who are also a team that you know keep an eye on. I mentioned the Edouard Julien song, the Twins daily stuff in the past as well. This is a Twins question, but it's really more about the mess of OK teams in the AL Central. The Tigers are obviously really good, and then the Twins, Guardians, and Royals are just kind of
there,
solid. But maybe there's an AL Central-ish factor to it. What do you make of where the Twins are kind of at a high level right now?
I am encouraged by a couple of things. I mean, the pitching has been very bad. They have the worst CRA in baseball in June, but they're still winning because their hitting has kind of finally taken off. And it's coming from some unexpected places. Like Matt Wallner is, I think we need to start talking about him as one of the best power hitters in baseball. And he is kind of had his ups and downs, but anybody with that much swing and miss and that much power is going to. But they're getting it from all these, like, Harrison Bader is really hitting. And you know, like, little things where these are not the people you thought would be plugging in the lineup. And Byron Buxton is finally healthy and performing. And so the pitching is scary right now, and losing Pablo Lopez is a very big deal. But if they're putting it together at the plate, this is a very solid lineup, 1-9. You know, like, Ryan Jeffers is one of the best hitting catchers in baseball, and he started slow, but he's looking like he's back. And so I'm encouraged as long as they can kind of get through this period with the rough pitching.
You mentioned the lineup. Blue Jays fans may not want to hear about Royce Lewis anymore. He had a big series. He had a big wild card series a couple years ago.
Yeah, the only times he's healthy are against the
Blue Jays. It's unbelievable. And I know that health is always going to play a factor here, or at least until he strings together a few seasons of you know, fully healthy baseball. But what will it take for him to actually go and break out? It seems like he's always on the cusp, right?
Right. I mean, he's a fascinating guy to watch because he does, like, he has so much confidence. I remember I was talking to someone early last season with the Twins, and they kind of said at that point he hadn't played much. You know, he was amazing against the Blue Jays in the playoffs in 23, and then he had this amazing start to 24, and then he got hurt right away. And they kind of said the offense will take, they were slumping, and they said the offense is going to take off as soon as we get Royce Lewis back. Which turned out to be true. But at the time, I was amazed. I was like, this guy's barely played in the majors, and they're already putting so much faith in him. Like, once we get him back, we're going to go. And I was like, that is not the way you talk about a rookie who hasn't played that much. But it was exactly what happened. He came back, and he was hitting, and their fortunes turned around. And then, obviously, they had the big slump to end the season. But I think they really believe in him. And when you watch him, when he does put it together, it looks impressive. So I don't know what's going on right now. It's scary. And, you know, he'd never really slumped like that. And so I don't know what to make of it. But I don't think anybody thinks he's done or that he can't hack it.
It's such a fascinating team construction where, like, that's the case with Royce Lewis. And it's kept him from his prime developmental time at the major league level. But there's still all the talent in the world there. Carlos Correa, when he can be healthy, is solid. But, you know, the injuries have maybe kind of eroded what we thought was going to be his prime, and at least like how early the decline would come. And then there's Byron Buxton, who is older than either of those guys, and still, you know, he had an IL stint earlier in the year, obviously with the concussion protocol stuff, but otherwise has been on the field a lot and has looked pretty good. How, like, some of what I'm getting at is, like, you have three guys that are big, like, if they can be healthy guys, and if they are all healthy, the Twins look pretty good. I guess what is your, we can't predict injuries or anything like that, but how cool has it been to at least see a healthier version of Byron Buxton able to play a good center field every day and have a pretty solid offensive season instead of it kind of being one or the other over the last 5-6 years?
Right. I mean, I think that's one of those things that if you care about baseball, you are rooting for this guy to just get a chance. I mean, I remember at the beginning of last season, I wrote an article that was just kind of expressing, like, this guy deserves a chance to have one full healthy season in his whole career. And he didn't get it last year. But so far, it's early. I'm sure something will happen. It's a long season for everybody. But it's just so nice to get to see him perform the way he's capable of. And it's crazy, too. He's still, I think he's like number one or two in sprint speed in the league. He's still, I mean, he's such a toolsy guy. He's so fast and so much power. And his approach seems to have matured a little bit this season. So it's just exciting to see what he can do when he finally gets a chance to be on the field for an extended period of time.
Yes. As of this morning, he is number one in sprint speed.
Oh, he's number one. Yeah.
Yes. He is number one as of this morning. So I don't know if that's sample size with some of the fast guys or whatever. He was particularly fast last night. Not sure. That's all I have on the Twins, other than shout out to Willie Castro for the eye black on the weekend, which was,
do we know if that was a planned thing?
We don't.
I mean, it would be, that's a pretty specific. So for anyone who didn't see it, he had eye black in the color of trans rights flags at the same time that Major League Baseball has removed a lot of the mention of that kind of initiative and support from all of their official materials while also promoting Pride Month. It's all, it would be quite a coincidence if that were not an intentional thing on the part of Willie Castro.
And it was, if I'm not super mistaken here, it was Pride Day or Pride Night at the ballpark. And that was the only day. So, again, we don't know. We can't know. We're not saying that he's making a political statement here or, you know, a social statement or whatever. But yeah, it's you put two and two together if you want.
It was. I'm going to choose to believe that Willie Castro is a good one. And shout out to Willie Castro.
Yeah.
I'm going to pivot off the Twins now. So that was last weekend. This coming weekend, the Blue Jays are going to see the Phillies again. And Davey, you've written a lot about Kyle Schwarber so far this season. It kind of is obvious when you're hitting that many home runs and you figured out lefties and things like that. But you've dug under the hood on what makes Schwarber so special a couple of times now. What are you seeing?
Well, there are a couple things. But first, I should leave with some good news. Kyle Schwarber has one hit in his last five games, and he is batting 114 over his last 10 in striking out 44% of the time. So you could not have picked a better time to face Kyle Schwarber. He's another one of those guys, like I mentioned, Wallner. He hits tons of home runs and strikes out a ton, and those guys are going to be streaky. When they're seeing the ball well, they're going to hit 900 home runs, and when they're not, they're going to strike out every time. And so things could turn around in the next 2 days, but it's looking like a great time to face Kyle Schwarber. But this season, on the whole, he has kind of upped his plate discipline in a serious way. He's been really attacking the heart of the zone, and it's really paid off. He's looking at as good as he's ever looked in his entire career. And so it's really fun to watch him when he's going well, because the ball just jumps off his bat, and when he hits a home run, everyone in the ballpark knows it immediately. But this is a good time to be running into him.
Well, if there is such thing as a good time to run into him, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Davey, I am not going to risk losing my job asking you about when players might be leaving for paternity leave anytime soon, but there are a couple Blue Jays on that list. So sorry, go ahead.
I have to say, this is the time. I mean, this is one of the times.
Yes.
Because I will not get into specifics, but there are certain times during the season when paternity list appearances spike. And this is a small relative spike. We're talking about a handful of guys at any one time. But this is one of the times, because we are 9 months after the season ended last season. And players get home and they are clearly happy to see their families.
Did you, in this study, did you look at defending World Series champions and whether that happens like 10 months?
That is a smaller sample that's a little more difficult to isolate. But right now I will say this, and this is too small a number to extrapolate meaning from, but I'm going to, because whatever. Right now, Zach Wheeler just came off paternity leave,
yep,
and Francisco Alvarez just went on, and they play on the Phillies and Mets, two playoff teams. And so it seems like maybe there could be not like I got home and the season is over, but we have a couple days off before the playoff starts, and I'm pretty psyched about that bump.
Interesting. Okay.
That is fascinating.
We're going to leave the specifics here to if you know, you know. where you can go check out Davey's, all his excellent work at Fangraphs, but you can dig around in the archives for that one as well. We won't do Cal Raleigh despite our plan, because Jays fans have seen and heard enough of Cal Raleigh lately, but it was a great piece. Enjoyed reading it this morning. Davey, thanks so much for doing this, man. Keep up all the great work.
All right. Thank you both.
Oh, actually, sorry. I'm glad they didn't hang up on you. What was the key to, you said that so Davey is also a baker.
I was going to ask about that in the interest of getting to know you, Davey.
So the Blondies, sure, that were too dry in your estimation for your album release party, but then better the second time you made them, what was the difference?
Oh, this is a different recipe.
Okay.
The first one is, we're doing a show, so I bake for all the shows. If you live in New York or you're visiting New York, come see one of our shows. You will get free baked goods. But those ones, because like I have to put them in Ziploc bags to transport them, if you bake them too soft, they'll kind of fall apart in transit, and then people aren't going to want to eat like a disintegrating blondie in the middle of the show. So I took them a little too far in the interest of transportation. It's like why Red Delicious apples are the ones that they serve in lunchrooms, because they transport well, even though they're disgusting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know what? That sounds like a great time. You get to see live music,
yes,
and eat some baked goods.
Yeah,
good
I will
job.
Say, my friends in Pup the Band did, at their album release party this year, serve chicken parm and spaghetti to everyone who was there, and they served it themselves. So you Subway
as
Ghost
soon
gotta
as we
open.
Have a Pup budget.
Yes. Yeah. Or I was going to say Subway Ghost got to open for Pup and then also be the catering company
at some point. Make this happen, yeah. Blake.
Dessert first, dinner later.
Yeah, they're in New York in September. We'll see how it goes. Davey, thanks so much for doing this, man.
We're going to talk. We're going to talk.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Davey Andrews of Fangraphs and the Subway Ghosts. Let's take a break. On the other side, let's talk to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America. If you are a Jays Talk Plus regular, you are very familiar with Jeff's work covering the Blue Jays farm system. Trey Savage, promoted to AA. Arjun Namala, keeping hot. Cal Steven with another good one yesterday. Let's get into all of it with Jeff Ponce as Jays Talk Plus continues after the break with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Jeff Ponce is going to join us in a minute here. We gave you the Blue Jays side of today's starting pitcher matchup, Eric Lauer, followed by Spencer Turnbull and, pseudo bullpen day, depending on how much length Lauer can give them. On the Cardinal side, Matthew Liberatore, who, like Jack Caglione, is a guy whose name I want to say more Italian than it is. I believe I called him Matthew Liberatore on the show earlier in the week when I was setting up the probables, just like I want to call Jack Caglione Jack Caglianone, because that's how it is spelt. And then I go to, this would be the super Italian pronunciation
of it. You actually did the Italian hand thing.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. Daniele Franceschi is upstairs being like, Blake, what the hell are you doing, man? anyway, Liberatore comes in with a 3.82 ERA. He's a lefty, by the way. So the first lefty the Jays have seen in this series. He is a heavy platoon splits guy. So we'll see if the Jays kind of stack righties here. Also could depend a little bit on the availability of Nathan Lucas or Will Robertson or whatever. Both of those guys are lefties, so maybe they're on the bench either way. But
Blue Jays did it recently. Who did they do it against where they had righties all the way?
They went 9 righties or switch hitters. Jeez, I can't remember who it was
me
against
neither.
Now.
I think it was during the homestand here.
Yeah, that's gonna bug me.
If you know, tweet it, Blake.
Oh, Jesus Lizardo.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, and how did that go?
Worked out pretty well for them.
Yes, Liberatore, also heavy platoon splits. He also, it's a weird one, so he was one of the early season breakout guys. Really good, really strong numbers. The last two starts have been iffy, and he left his last start with fatigue-related issues. Not very specific there, but not a good sign, I don't think, generally. Yeah. We're in June. He has not been a full-time starter at the major league level, although he did throw, 86 innings last year and 126 the year before. So he's thrown a fair amount of innings. Not great to have the fatigue-related stuff set in, though.
Yeah, you kind of hear from people around the Cardinals, they didn't seem particularly concerned about this. But if you're talking about a guy who hasn't necessarily been a full season guy for a little bit, and then you're having those issues, and then, you know, the numbers and the quality of his starts are also pointing to something else. Interesting to sort of navigate that. We'll see how far he goes today, but is it a profile that is more or less kind of like everything else that the Cardinals do on the pitching side? Is it a lot of ground balls and not a ton of swing and miss?
So not a ton of ground balls, but also not a ton of swing and miss. He misses more bats than Miles Michaelis, certainly. He's got a 21% strikeout rate, so a little below league average. He walks nobody, which is kind of his thing. However, when you dig in a little bit more, so sometimes with these command guys, like, you can be a low walk guy because you just don't throw a lot of balls. You can be a low walk guy and you're in the zone too much and you're hittable. You can be a low walk guy, and because of that, guys are geared up for everything's going to be close and we're going to try to make a lot of if it's half a ball width off the plate, we got to go get it.
Right.
So with Liberatore, what you get is he is among the league leaders in chase rate, so getting guys the swing outside of the zone. However, he's well below average at swing and miss. So this is very much because he's always around the zone, because he pitches on the edges so much, guys go in with the game plan of, I've got to expand a little bit because it's hittable and because he works the black so well. So it'll be interesting contrast with the Blue Jays, who will chase a little bit. They'll expand the zone, but they're the best team in the league at not swinging and missing. They're the best team in the league at not striking out. They are a team that generally operates as if they are going against Matthew Liberatore, even when they're not. So that doesn't always work out in your favor, but it does seem like on paper, the Blue Jays are well equipped to handle Liberatore because that's what they're trying to do in general anyway at the plate.
So that's okay. But you did touch on something that came to mind for me as well here, which is, yes, this is what the Blue Jays kind of always try to do. And at the same time, we have seen them struggle against these pitchers that don't offer a ton of swing and miss for whatever reason. I'm not entirely sure, you know, if it is about game plan or what, but that is when you see sort of the awkward contact from Blue Jays hitters a little bit more than you would expect. Yeah, maybe it's just a psychological thing of, I know this guy doesn't offer a ton of swing and miss, and maybe it's game plan. I don't really know. And again, I've been kind of the downer today, and it does not reflect at all how I feel because this has been such a fun show. But yeah, it concerns me a little bit when I see this type of profile for the Blue Jays matchups because it doesn't always go their way. It's like somehow they thrive on the challenge of getting to high strikeout pitchers or something like that. So I don't know, just something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah, it's...
I hope I'm wrong.
Well, it's also like a baseball season's long and kind of random. It's, you know, I thought that Andre Plante was a guy that they could do pretty well against because you think of a guy who, yeah, it's a lot of contact on the ground, but he gives up a lot of hard contact, and the Blue Jays are a team that can string some hard contact singles together, and it didn't really work out that way. Although George Springer was the guy that I thought could do fairly well, and shout out to Chris Black on that one. He kind of tipped me off to dig in a little deeper on Springer against those high arm angle guys.
Right.
And then yesterday, Michaelis looked like the type of guy that they should be. Here's the thing. They've been a really good offense for like 6 weeks. A lot of pitcher types now are going to look like better matchups for the Blue Jays than we were talking about in April, where every pitcher looked like a bad matchup for them. So that aspect of it is interesting. The Jays have also seen Liberatore a little bit in the past. He had a 3-inning relief outing against them late last year. It went well for Liberatore. The Jays who are still on the roster went 0-for-7 against him. Madison Bargar had a walk. And then Miles Straw and Andrés Giménez have gotten hits off of him in the past, but when they were on other teams.
Blake is going through his sneeze routine. Just two?
Yeah, I'm trying to fight it off. Don't draw attention to it.
Bless you.
Pick up the baton.
I
okay.
did.
By the way, Jeff Ponce is not going to join us after all. Had a scheduling conflict. We'll talk to him on Friday, which who knows?
Awesome.
Maybe that works out a little better and lines up a little better with Treya Savage's debut with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. So we will just cruise the rest of this one. I've got some...
Buckle up.
Yeah. So I want to go back to a couple things from the game that we didn't necessarily get to go deep on.
Yeah.
And one of them is the Will Robertson thing. We kind of got into it a little bit, and it's not official yet that Will Robertson's coming up. But again, if you are not familiar, A, you haven't been listening to the the show that much, but 27-year-old left-handed hitting outfielder who is hitting .288 at AAA with 12 home runs and a .992 OPS as he was on his way up through the minors. This is, you know, a guy who had a lot of swing and miss, and up until recently, there wasn't enough payoff for the swing and miss, I'll say. He didn't walk a lot. There was power in terms of like exit velocities and things like that, but not a lot of power in terms of actually leading to home runs. Then over the last 2 years, the strikeouts have still been there, but a little bit more of the power started to show. He had an Arizona Fall League appearance a couple years back that was basically sometimes it's the top prospects who go to the Arizona Fall League because they need extra seasoning or you want to get guys more reps. Sometimes it's we need to see what you've got because we have to make a Rule 5 40-man decision on you. And the Jays eventually opted not to put Will Robertson on the 40-man. He obviously didn't go claimed in Rule 5 drafts. And now here he is. He is 27, so you don't get quite as excited about the breakout at AAA because if you're 27 and you're repeating AAA, you're supposed to be pretty good. But so far this year, the walk rate is way, way up. The strikeout rate is still fairly, like he strikes out 24% of the time, so a little above average. But as far as a power hitting guy goes, and especially compared to his prior minor league seasons, strikeout rates come down. The chase rate has really come down. He's dropped his chase rate from 33% to 27%. So if you think about how often he's just kind of wasting swings, he's done a better job of that. And then the power is there underneath. 12 homers and 8 doubles.
Slugging almost 600, which is also pretty unbelievable at this point. And he had his career high as 19 home runs in the minors.
Yeah.
He's way more than halfway there. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, already there almost. And yeah, speaking of the Buffalo Bisons, Will Robertson, it sounds like, won't be there on Friday, but Max Scherzer, we expected it to be the case. It is official now. Max Scherzer will start for the Buffalo Bisons on Friday. It's a 6:35 first pitch, so you'll be able to check out a little bit of that one.
That's exciting.
Before Jays Phillies, although not much because the Jays Phillies game starts at 6:45, so you might have to double screen it.
Oh, darn, that.
A Friday night full of baseball.
Honestly, I love that. I know that it's a day game today, and I kind of, just said thank God to myself that it's a day game. It's crazy how much of a difference it makes. The game starting just 30 minutes later, just in my schedule overall. Mm. I am so happy that we have a day game and then hopefully back to more normal times. I will not tolerate another West Coast trip.
Well, you'll have to at some point.
Fine.
They are in Los Angeles in early August, the second weekend of August, I believe they're playing against the Dodgers. Although that's a weekend one, so you could PVR it if you need to. There and so go. It'd be a 4 p.m. start on the Sunday. You'll be all right. Okay. Because it is a day game.
Yep.
We have a St. Louis Cardinals lineup. We don't have a Toronto Blue Jays lineup just yet. But on the Jays side, so we mentioned it's Eric Lauer starting, and then we expect Spencer Turnbull to follow at some point. And then if you look at who's down and who's up for the Blue Jays bullpen, Brendan Little might be the only lefty reliever available. So what were the Cardinals, who start three everyday lefties, going to do? They're only playing two of those. Lars Nootbaar is still leading off. Alec Burleson's still in there. And they've got two other lefties in Nolan Gorman and Victor Scott in the lineup. But so interesting there that they're going to go with four of their usual lefties. It's Brandon Donovan who gets the off day. But Brandon Donovan came out of the game yesterday with an apparent injury. I don't think I ever saw an update on what it was, but he was subbed out at some point. So I believe Donovan is injury related. And otherwise they've been...
I think it was toe discomfort. Is what it was. Which, sure.
Stubbed your toe.
It happens.
Yeah.
Right? And it's going to affect
someone. Isn't someone on the IL right now with a stubbed toe?
For the Cardinals or the Blue Jays?
No, in general.
In general? I don't know. I don't have that stuff. I'll let you Google and I'll just yammer while you Google that.
I swear I saw that the other day. Someone went on the IL. Toe inflammation. What are we looking at here?
This is
terrible radio, me looking something up.
Well, we are scramble, admittedly. We were supposed to have a guest. It didn't work out. And so we're kind of figuring this one out on the fly.
No, good for us. We also have a couple leftover text line questions from the other day. I won't put out a call for text line questions today, but we are going to do that. I'm not sure which of the days, Thursday or Friday, but get your questions ready because we're going to do a text line segment in one of those. So, okay, I'm going to quickly go through a couple of these. This was one from Twitter the other day. Is Aurelvis, and it's relevant again because the Will Robertson reported call-up. Is Aurelvis ever getting a shot here? What are the team's plans? This is one, again, he's hitting better of late. He's playing second base now instead of bouncing between second, short, and third. He's primarily playing second, but the reports that I've heard at least are that his defense is not quite where they would like it yet.
To improve the defense.
Yeah.
And get a chance. That's it.
And like the Jays have had openings in the infield, but Addison Barger's kind of run with the extra reps that they have available in the infield. You certainly weren't going to call Aurelvis up to play the Michael Stefanik role. We've seen how little Davis Schneider's played. You don't really want Aurelvis doing that because while all these minor league guys are a little older, Aurelvis is the young one. He's still only 23. He's a guy that I really don't think you want playing once or twice a week off the bench.
I agree with you. It just doesn't bode well for a guy's development. And Aurelvis is a guy who is still very much developing. I know we've been talking about him for a few years now as being, almost there, nearly ready. He got his chance and it did not end well type of thing. And he's still working his way back from that 100%. And until we, see consistency on both sides of the ball, I will say, because he was also not hitting well to start the season. I think what's best for everyone is that he stay in Triple A. Blake, I can take over the text line things here if you would like.
I'm kind of scrolling. I should have done this before, but I didn't expect to do text line today. But
we were just gossiping straight up during the break. And we could have been prepping for the worst.
But we didn't know that Jeff was going to need to bump.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And listen,
Jeff
what we
Pont's
do at
public
the
public enemy number one. He's not. Jeff Pont's is actually public favorite number one, because if you're a Blue Jays prospect person, Jeff has been more optimistic than most about the Jays system over the last 18 months or so, and he's been proven pretty correct as some of the names he's highlighted over the years become more notable.
Can I take one here, though?
Because you can. This one is... Just, there are a couple of these that are outdated now is okay. All that we have to be mindful of.
I don't think this one is outdated, and I am interested to hear your thoughts on this, because I've talked to show... kind of around this. Wow, so Ryan
just
and
talking
Campbell
about your side piece host on the show to me. Unbelievable.
Oh, we had so much fun on Friday. Anyway, Ryan and Campbellford asked thoughts on a Bo trade and what the Blue Jays would get back for Bo. Listen, this is interesting because we've tried to sort of project what a Bo contract would look like. I still have no idea what a contract would look like for him, both in terms of term and overall money or AAV. What do you think? I don't think it's on the table.
The Toronto Blue Jays are in a playoff spot right now. If they are in a playoff spot, we're not talking about a Bo Bichette trade. They will, it's not the safest way to manage assets and things like that. If they're in a playoff spot, they are going for a playoff run and they will figure out the Bo Bichette thing in free agency. And absolute worst case scenario, you'll lose him and get a comp pick, which isn't great. Like, you don't want to lose a guy for that. But you're not trading away your leadoff hitter who's playing pretty well while you're in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
I can't find the team that you can make a win-win trade with that makes sense. And you're able to fill the shortstop position. Like, even if you really like Ernie Clement and Addison Barger as everyday guys, you think Aurelvis is ready. You think Jimenez can make a mid-season move from second base to shortstop. That's so many ifs. And then you have to get value back, and it has to be win now value because you're in a playoff spot. You know what that would do to if you traded away your starting shortstop and leadoff hitter while in a playoff spot and it didn't work out?
Yeah. That's a good point, because there is no clear succession plan.
And just you're in a win now window. I know that the Vlad extension and having Jimenez and Kirk and guys like that locked up means the contention window has gone from you have to be all in to maximize 2025 to you can look a little longer term. But you can't take that big a hit to your everyday team right now unless I don't know. Unless you're going to get an ace pitcher back or another guy you can slot in at the top of the lineup. And if you were to get back a guy that you could slot in toward the top of the lineup, you probably need it to be a middle infielder. Right. And which team lines up like that? It's really hard to find something that makes sense for a win-win trade in the present term for Bo Bichette.
It would be splashy, though. It would be the headline of the trade deadline if that happened.
Yeah.
We both...
Who has a superfluous ace that they could trade for a shortstop right now? Because that'd be all right. But
yeah, just not going to happen.
Not while they're in a playoff spot.
Yeah. We'll see.
What else we got?
It's a long season. Okay, so do you like the one I highlighted there in the doc?
Yeah.
Okay, so about Jeff Hoffman. If what John Schneider said was true about, utilizing Hoffman regardless because he had already been up in the eighth and all of that, why not just start him with a clean ninth inning there? Why bring him in to sort of clean up a mess? Mandy says, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a great question for Mandy, because basically what she's saying, and for anyone who missed it earlier, John Schneider said that once Hoffman got up in the eighth and had warmed up enough, he was going to be down today regardless. So when the team is deciding if a guy is down or yellow or whatever, they are looking at the pitch count when they're warming up. They're looking at what they're doing in their side sessions. Everything has a fatigue unit, we'll call it, and you're looking at, well, he's down today because he's amassed X amount of units or X amount of pitches, whatever you want to call it, over the last couple of days. My guess would be that the hope was still to avoid using him, because while he was down today, maybe if you didn't do that, he could be available twice on the weekend. He would be available Friday, Saturday, and now he would only be available Friday, Sunday. There's a rolling... Probably if you're a reliever, I'd imagine they look at kind of 2 week windows, so you could still minimize it a little bit. But yeah, it's also you got to be able to trust Chad Green with a 4-run lead if you're going to pitch him in leverage. So anyway, I understand the question, Mandy. It makes sense. I get why you would feel that way. The other answer is, it wasn't a save situation, and some people are, and I don't think John Schneider is guilty of this too often, but sometimes people just don't use their closers unless it's a save situation. Mm-hmm. And, 4-run lead is different than a three-run lead with a couple, or four-run lead with nobody on base is different than a four-run lead with two guys on base. It's a tough one. But, I get the question. If he was going to be down regardless, why not give him a clean inning? My guess is that it'll bleed into the weekend and what things look like over a two-week window.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I can ask about that when they're back home, by the way.
But I think you're onto something. I would say that is pretty much... Yeah.
Somebody remind me when the Blue Jays are back home, and I'll ask about that.
Definitely won't be me. Amit, please remind Blake of one more thing. Okay, next question. Frank in Belleville. When this team is healthy, who are the odd ones out? Class A has looked great in the nine spot. I want him to keep playing. Frank, we will pass that along as well when the Blue Jays are back, that you want him to keep playing. But I'll give you a quick answer and tell me if you agree with this. Right now, it looks like the odd ones out are Davis Schneider and Alan Rhodes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty, like, in terms of who's on the roster, I think that's pretty clear. In terms of playing time, you could get into the Lucas Class A Straw split. But Davis Schneider and Alan Roden are not playing every day, even on their sides of the platoon necessarily. Now, in Schneider's case, they haven't faced a lefty starter in a while. But Davis Schneider was also, he has been pinch hit above. What I mean by that is he was a righty available on the bench. And when a lefty came in, they used other pinch hitters above him a couple of times now. So he's not even top of the list in terms of bench off the bat when a lefty reliever's in there. So I think that one is pretty obvious. And Alan Roden's played a little bit more in the last couple days. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that one's, I think you are correct in that Davis Schneider and Alan Roden would be next down. That answer obviously becomes like Will Robertson, if Will Robertson does get added to the roster,
right.
But we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. But we do expect the Will Robertson stint, at least for starters, to be kind of short here, right?
We'll see. There is no roster move as of yet. However, Mitch Bannon is letting up The Athletic is letting us know that Will Robertson is in St. Louis. He's there. So we don't know if there's a corresponding move, but he will not be starting because we have a starting lineup.
Oh, cool.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. is back in there playing first base and hitting second. Alejandro Kirk in the three hole today, and he'll get a DH day because, wouldn't you know it, the Blue Jays are once again going nine righties / switch hitters. I'll run through it real quick. Bichette, Guerrero, Kirk, Springer, Clement, Schneider, Straw, Class A, Heineman. So all nine righties /
huge. First of all, it worked the first time. Second of all, again, huge opportunities for guys like Davis Schneider, to sort of show a little bit more than he has so far. He's been pretty good since coming back. I don't think anyone is going to disagree with that, but definitely a role player for this team. Well, role players have done particularly well around this time of year with the Blue Jays. And so nice to see him get the start and just the opportunity to get something else done here. It's been cool to sort of see his OPS climb by the bunches since he came back after that dismal start to the season. But he's getting a little bit more going right now. Cool to see him in there kind of getting another chance.
Yeah, it'll be, and again, interesting that if you miss us setting up Matthew Liberatore, he is a lefty with very heavy platoon splits. So that's why you want to get as many righties and switch hitters who can hit from the right side in there as possible. If you're looking at Liberatore, it's a fastball that comes in about 94, and then slider, changeup, cutter, curveball, sinker. Whew, a lot of pitches. And again, I mentioned earlier, he doesn't walk a lot of guys, and guys will expand the zone against him, but that's in part because he works around the edges and is pretty hittable from a contact perspective. On the other side would be Eric Lauer, and here we'll wrap it up with a question for Brad and Kitchener. What should we expect from Spencer Turnbull? My answer to that is a cop-out. Let's see at 2:15 or ideally at like 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would mean Eric Lauer. Yeah, look, I don't have very high expectations for Turnbull out of the gate here. He was not particularly strong on his rehab stint. The reports beyond the box score line were not particularly strong either. They kept talking about mechanical issues and things like that. He's only on the roster because they ran out of time. You can't keep him down there forever. So my expectations are fairly modest. We'll see today how that goes in a bulk role and if he can build up from there. One other question that I'll just tackle off because it won't make sense after today. Kanji and Whippy ask, last night's game saw multiple pitching changes for both teams, with three of them resulting in a home run on the first batter face. Has that ever happened before? I don't know. I don't know how to query something that specific. Yeah. But it was pretty amusing, and I think two of them were on the first pitch.
Yeah.
Not just the first batter. So good question. I don't actually know the answer, but it's a fun one to kick around.
Sometimes a manager looks very smart with those pitching changes, and then yesterday it was just circus music all over the place.
Yeah, and some of that is bullpen availability, some of that is randomness, some of that is, I don't know, for me personally, I don't think Chad Green is anywhere near the trust tree right now, but they don't have a lot of options on a day like yesterday. Hopefully it goes a little smoother today. It's a 2:15 start. Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, and Sho Ali will have the radio broadcast for you. Jamie and Arden on Blue Jay Central. Dan, Caleb, and Hazel on the television broadcast. Been fun to have Caleb on there for a couple games and hear him. Thanks to Davey Andrews and Benji Molina for joining us. If you want to listen to the Cardinals Spanish language broadcast, you can hear more from Benji Molina on Espanol. Thanks to Ahmed Mon, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Blair and Barker will have you post game. We will be back at 10 a.m. tomorrow to break it all down. Have a wonderful Wednesday.